You're listening to another episode of VGCast. VGCast, of course, is our video game podcast where we digest the latest video game news in our changelog, where we chat about what we've been playing in our game queue, and of course, what to look forward to in the world of the video game industry. I'm your host, Brad Johansson, and with me today, as always, is our co-host and buddy, the only man Kilgrave's powers don't work on, Mr. Troy Giles. Happy Thanksgiving, man. How are you?
Not too bad. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too, and all you folks out there listening, you know, even though this is going on after Thanksgiving, so hopefully you guys are actually listening and not passed out from turkey.
That's right. Or ham, or fried
or
chicken.
Both.
I've seen those all over.
Or all three.
All three. All of the above, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving and is anticipating the merry holidays on their way. So that's not what we're here to talk about, though. We're here to talk about, of course, video games. And especially since it's this time of the year, we're going to talk about the best games of the year. And this is going to be kind of a game of the year special, if you will. We're going to start the show off similar to how we always do. Instead of talking about our changelog, the news that's happened in the industry, we're going to start right off the top going over the Game Awards nominees. The Game Awards, of course, is the show that Jeff Keighley, the former host of the VGAs and former worker, I guess, co-worker for the, what was the, GameTrailers.com, as well as whatever their network was. It wasn't G4. It was Spike TV, I guess.
It was Spike TV. They had a show up there.
Yeah, they since canceled the VGAs, but Jeff Keighley has been funding his own Game Awards in an attempt to more Oscarize the video game industry's Game Awards ceremony. So they had the GDCs, the Game Developers Awards, essentially, which are similar to the Writers Guild Awards in movies, where their version of the Oscars doesn't quite exist. And I guess you could say this is kind of his attempt at making something like that. They had their first show last year, which I thought it did pretty well. Did you think it did pretty well, Troy?
Yeah, it was not bad. The only, I guess, downside was Joel McHale.
Yeah.
he just did not seem like he was enthusiastic to be there. So hopefully we get somebody that either likes video games or maybe just not anybody at all, really. You know, if we just have to deal with Keighley by himself.
The one thing that, or I guess a couple of things that I didn't like was, A, it seemed like it went on too long. And off the top here, excuse me if I sound a little different. I am sick. I might be clearing my throat quite a few times during this podcast. So forgive me, you guys. I am just a little bit sick. It's not enough to keep me off from recording, but I do apologize for that. But yeah, it seemed like the Game Awards last year, it was like 3 hours long, which was insane. A lot of the awards were presented off the stage and down on like this little side walkway thing that Keighley was at. And in order to like make room, and they were trying to do it faster, I guess, instead of having people up on the stage, or maybe they were trying to make room for a performer or something, but he was giving away awards like down on the side, and it was really awkward, and none of the stuff seemed scripted. So he would just stand there waiting for the person to receive the award to walk up, and they would have an awkward conversation, and he'd tell him to go sit down. It was really, really strange. And it seemed like they still couldn't quite find the balance between having an award show and having a premiere show, which a premiere show would be something that is showing off all these different premieres. And that seems to be something that Jeff Keighley really believes in, which I'm fine with. I just want it to be more awards, less premieres. I don't mind the premiere stuff. I think we got a couple of, you know, interesting trailers. I think, like, didn't they show Zelda Open World last year?
I believe so.
That may have been the first time we saw it, actually.
Yeah, I think that was the premiere. The premiere of premieres, basically. I don't think there was anything else, per se, but I believe that Zelda was there. And I mean, I can understand where he's coming from. Granted, he worked or works at Game Trailers, so Game Trailers is known for their premieres and stuff like that too, and he used to do that television show on Spike TV as well. So, you know, I guess that's the one thing that they have that the Oscars don't have. The Oscars don't premiere, like, they don't show trailers for new movies coming out. This does, and it makes it run a little bit longer as well. So I guess you take the good and the bad with it, because I mean, other than like E3 and any of the other conferences that go on during the year, I mean, this is the only other chance you got right here. So
that's right.
I guess people pay good money to get their trailers and stuff thrown in there.
This is the Game Awards 2015 will air at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, which is next Thursday, December 3rd. It'll be live from the Microsoft Theater, which is in downtown Los Angeles. It's going to be live streamed on basically every platform imaginable. It's going to be on Twitch, YouTube, Steam, the PlayStation Network. It's going to be on your Wii U and Xbox Live. So you're going to be able to watch it from basically any platform that you own. They'll have some musical appearances. Last year they had there's some rock band that was really good. And they had the musical composer for a lot of Nintendo games was up there playing piano and stuff. Mm-hmm. That was really interesting as well. But yeah, that'll be next week, next Thursday. So we thought it'd be really cool. Before we talk about our game of the year, we thought it'd be pretty interesting to go through some of their choices and some of their categories. For example, we don't have to talk about this one, but this is as an example, best independent game or best mobile game or best narrative. You know, we thought it'd be interesting if we talked about just some of them, including their game of the year nominees and a little bit of our predictions. So we'll save that one, the game of the year category, for a little later. How about... Let's look at best shooter, Troy. This would be an easy one to start off with, I think. I think we've played most of these games. I know neither one of us played Splatoon. There was a lot out when that game came out, so I didn't get a chance to play that. But yeah, you played a bunch of Destiny. I know we both played some Halo 5 beta at one point. I played Star Wars Battlefront. Did you play Battlefront?
No. The Star Wars Battlefront beta. So, I mean, there's that.
Yeah, that's all I played. What do you think about this best shooter category? Any of those really stand out?
Well, it's interesting that they want to throw in Destiny the Taken King in there, considering that, you know, it's an expansion. It's not a new game. Even though it seems like it's a new game, it's not really a new game. So it's surprising to throw in an expansion pack in there, basically, as a contender for best shooter. Of course, you got your mainstays like Call of Duty, Halo. Instead of a Battlefield, you got Battlefront. So, mm-hmm. I mean,
do you think Splatoon has a chance?
You know what? I mean, it does have a chance. I've heard great things about Splatoon, that it's really fun. It's addicting. You know, the only thing is that, I mean, depending on who's actually going to cast their votes for these, you know, some people may look at them as which one's more competitive. Mm-hmm. Like, which is the shooter, the end-all shooters, basically, which ones are more people talking about and stuff, and which ones are being seen a lot more. And you kind of got to take Splatoon out, because it being only on the Wii U, you know, it's not getting a lot of visibility. So it would be nice for Splatoon to win, but I don't think it's going to.
Yeah,
honestly, it would probably be it's got to be between the big three. It's got to be between Halo, Call of Duty, and Battlefront, because, you know, Battlefront, we haven't had a new one in years. Call of Duty's Call of Duty. It's going to basically stay the same, which pretty much means most people that like to play shooters are going to enjoy it anyway. Mm-hmm. And then Halo 5, they've just revamped the whole multiplayer system quite a bit. You know,
it's a very interesting category when you start to dissect it, because if we go down the list here, you got Call of Duty Black Ops 3, which was a disaster on PC when it first came out, which still does some of its shady practices and, you know, still uses mostly the same engine that they've been using for a long time. You got Destiny, which, as you said, is a game that it's just an expansion pack. This isn't the full game we're talking about. That came out 2 years ago. This is just the expansion pack. Then you got Halo 5 Guardians, which there was a lot of controversy over that game's campaign. You got a couple, one or two levels that were literally you just talking to people. That's it. You have three levels as Master Chief. That's it. You have Battlefront, which has almost no single player experience at all. It is Battlefront from yesteryear, which is almost no single player content, just multiplayer wave after wave, or rather horde mode, essentially. And which is kind of strange in 2015. And then you got Splatoon, which was Nintendo's attempt to make a Call of Duty, but in a very Nintendo way. And it's very interesting to see this list and to think who's going to come out on top. I think you're right. It's going to have to be Black Ops, Halo, or Battlefront. I feel like the voters for this, which are mostly journalists from what I've read, I feel like they wouldn't pick Destiny of the Taken King as an expansion pack. Although that is what they righted the ship, I thought, in that expansion pack. It made a lot of things better. So I would not be wholly surprised if that was picked, although that's not what I hope is picked. I would think maybe Halo or Black Ops 3 probably is going to be the one that deserves. In this year as a whole, I think probably Halo or Black Ops. What do you think? Who do you think should win?
I mean, just thinking about this list is like, well, another reason why Destiny shouldn't even be up here is because, I mean, the shooting from Destiny Vanilla and Destiny Taken King is pretty much 1-to-1. Like, there really wasn't that much of a difference when it came to the actual shooting aspect of it. And then you got to take it in this stride. When they're going to go with best shooter, they're going to go mostly with best multiplayer. Like, they're not really focusing on that single player, because then you'd have to focus on the narrative, and that would be a whole other category.
Right.
So, honestly, with Call of Duty's, you know, dismal performance on the PC, I would almost give it the Battlefront because of the numbers that they've been showing on PS4 compared to Xbox One and PC, where they're basically doing the numbers for those two combined.
Well, interesting you bring up multiplayer, because the Game Awards later has a category called Best Multiplayer, which includes Black Ops 3, Destiny, Halo 5, Splatoon, and Rocket League. They leave Battlefront out of that category, which that's all Battlefront is.
Yeah, I was about to say, they must have forgot that Battlefront does not have any single player.
Yeah.
You can play it by yourself, but I mean, have fun with that.
Yeah, so that makes me wonder if that's kind of a tell right there, that Battlefront is going to get missed off the best shooter.
Okay, you know what? Just thinking about that now, you might want to give it just Halo 5.
Yeah.
Because just thinking back to that beta for Battlefront and thinking about the shooting in it, it just seemed kind of generic, kind of basic. You didn't have to worry about reloading at all. You just had to worry about cooling down your weapon, which is pretty easy if you fired in a burst pattern instead of just constantly holding down the trigger.
Right.
At least with Halo 5 and Call of Duty, there is some strategy to it. And I think that after 343 kind of limped in with Halo 4, I think they're going in a right direction with Halo 5, especially in their multiplayer department. So I'd probably give it to Halo 5 when it comes to the shooting.
Yeah, I would have to agree there. I think that's probably a safe bet, just looking at everything. I mean, I played Black Ops 3, you played Destiny. We both played Battlefront Beta, neither of us played Splatoon. I think with that general consensus, yeah, I think Halo 5 is probably a pretty good shoe-in. Maybe a good shoe-in for best multiplayer, but I think Rocket League is going to stun a lot of people this year.
Yeah.
For that category. it's just really, really addicting. I actually have a chance to play that finally, so I can talk about that towards the end of the show, because I don't want to get in the way of what we're planning to talk about. So, speaking of what we plan to talk about, let's move to the next category. The one category that's listed actually right after Best Shooter is Best Action Adventure Game. This one's pretty interesting as well.
Jesus Christ.
It somehow still includes Assassin's Creed, which, whatever, which I admit probably was a better game than Unity, but it's just strange that, like, this game keeps getting shoot in, it seems like, every year for these categories. So maybe that's a testament to their developers. We also got Batman Arkham Knight, Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, Ori and the Blind Forest, and then finally Rise of the Tomb Raider. Now, I have played 3 out of the 5 in that list. Troy, how many of those have you played?
4 out of the 5.
Four out of the 5.
Still not played Ori and the Blind Forest, even though I've heard such great things about it.
Man, that would be one. Ooh, you should play that one. That's like the wild card in this list. You have Assassin's Creed, Batman, Metal Gear, Tomb Raider, and then Ori and the Blind Forest. It's so strange to see that up there with those literally long-time AAA titles. That's strange. But it's a solid game. It was a really good game.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not doubting that at all, because just looking at the footage of it, it's beautiful. It looks like it's got a Metroidvania type of style, where you have to have a certain, like you have to have a certain tool or ability to get past some parts that you have to come back to or something like that. you know, like most of these games, not going to lie, like Rise of the Tomb Raider is like that, where you have to have a certain thing to get past a certain area.
Arkham Knight was that way. You know, you gotta have the whole series has always been that way. You know, you gotta have the grappling hook maxed out in order to get through this wall or something like that.
So. Exactly. And I mean, then you got Metal Gear Solid 5, which it may not have been the strongest of the Metal Gear Solids, but it also is the last of Kojima Productions, you know, games, period, basically. Mm-hmm. So you could almost give that like a lifetime achievement, basically. It's like, oh, well, last game, might as well do that, because most of these other studios will probably see another game come out of them, especially, I would definitely think Ori and the Blind Forest will see another game come out. Not maybe not a sequel, but just another another action or adventure game. You know, Ubisoft Quebec's going to always pump out another Assassin's Creed. Rocksteady's always thinking about another video game. Maybe not Batman, but maybe another superhero. And Crystal Dynamics will probably put out another Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I hate the fact that they would get that if that would be the case, where it would be a Lifetime Achievement Award for Metal Gear Solid 5, because it's the weakest one.
Yeah.
I'd much rather have seen it go to, well, any of the other ones. Honestly, like 3 or 4, or go back to 1, or not really 2. But if we don't include that, if we just don't worry about that, you know, thinking that it's going to get it because it's the last game of the series, then you have 4 solid titles, one that did horrible on PC with Arkham Knight, still doing horrible on PC. It's doing so bad that for Black Friday, they had a deal where you can buy all 3 of the movies and the game for $62. So for any system. So yeah, let's get rid of that. Assassin's Creed was just, you know, they're going back to basics, which is a good thing. And I haven't finished it yet, but, you know, for the most part, it is Assassin's Creed. It is exactly what you would think of Assassin's Creed. But, and Rise of the Tomb Raider was great. It was an amazing game. It can't win because, and I hate to say it, it's because it was only on one system. It's a problem where not a lot of people are being introduced to the game.
Right.
So a lot of people have to wait almost a whole year to play the game. So
I think because of that point alone, I think Metal Gear Solid 5 should win. And if you look at Tomb Raider, only on it's technically on 2, but it's the same. It's 360 and Xbox One.
Yeah.
360 version looks great, by the way. It looks like they really held that version up. But Metal Gear Solid 5, it launched on 5 platforms the same day. Yeah. And every single version was fantastic, supposedly. No issues. Syndicate delayed their PC version. They only released on Xbox One and PS4. Arkham Knight, I think, launched all 3 on the same time. But really, they launched on one platform because the PC version was a disaster and the Xbox One version wasn't exactly something to write home about. And then Ori and the Blind Forest obviously came out only on Xbox One and then on PC as well, which had problems on Xbox One. So I almost like – I didn't play the Phantom Pain, but that is an impressive resume. 5 platforms on a game that's large, and they're all pretty solid. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there were problems. Not going to lie, there were problems. There were some problems with being able to log in, or – when you weren't able to log in, the game would start up just fine. But if you were able to log in, you'd have to go through a lot of different menus to get to the actual game part. So, I mean, there were some problems, but you're right. I mean, they did launch on 5 different systems, or just 5 different outlets right there, and hardly had any problems whatsoever.
Right.
I really would love to see Ori and the Blind Forest win it, just for a... basically an arcade title to win mm-hmm. this. But it's between Metal Gear Solid and Ori and the Blind Forest, honestly. And if we're just going to go, I mean, probably, and also just for the sheer amount of time that you can put in, or I don't think Ori and the Blind Forest is that long.
It's not that long, no.
But Metal Gear Solid, I mean, you can put in days. So, and there's just different aspects of the game that people love. So, I mean, you almost got to give it to it.
I wouldn't be surprised if Tomb Raider won. I would be surprised if Syndicate won. And I would be surprised if Arkham Knight won. And I would be pretty angry if Arkham Knight won because of the disaster and how the PC port was handled. I think that just shows the true intentions of the publisher. And I really wouldn't want to award that publisher as well as that studio for that disaster that happened, which really, really sucks because I think Arkham Knight, if those platforms had worked properly, that was a fantastic game. But I really just don't want to let that go, the fact that they released it so broken on another platform and it seemingly tried to cover it up by only releasing review copies for the PS4 version.
Yeah. And
that's something that really bothers me. But that game, I have to admit, is very, very good, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's good. Like I said, when it wants to work, it's good. But it's the getting it to work problem.
All right, Troy, you got a category you want to talk about?
Let's see.
Really can't playing game, fighting game, well, family game.
We don't want to talk about fighting game because literally there's probably two games on here that everybody's heard of.
I've only played one.
Yeah, exactly. And I've only played one of those, and that's Mortal Kombat X. So I mean, you know, honestly, well, we'll leave most anticipated for like last. We don't need to talk about esports at all or trending gamer. Because who cares? I kind of want to talk about best sports and racing.
Do it. Let's do it.
Because this list is interesting. Because you have probably two mainstays, FIFA 16 and NBA 2K16.
Right. Best sports game. But it's also racing game as well is what this category covers.
And you got Forza Motorsport 6. Okay. Pro Evolution Soccer 2016, that's not surprising to see as well. But then you get the game breaker right here with Rocket League. And I don't know how many times Rocket League has been nominated in most of these categories. It's like, man, you see Rocket League up here quite a bit.
That's true.
And it's interesting because it is basically it's the slash in the title.
It is
a sports game, and technically it is a racing game because you're racing to the ball in cars and you're trying to score like a sports game. So it takes the best of both Forza Motorsports and FIFA 16 and puts them together.
That's true.
And the amount of press, the amount of just publicity that this game is getting and the public outcry of just goodness that's coming out of it. Like, I mean, it's amazing just to see that this game came out of nowhere.
It launched, you could argue that it launched as a free game for PlayStation Plus, because that's really when it exploded, when this game launched to PS Plus users for free. Like, all of a sudden, it just blew up. Everyone was like, did you download Rocket League? Did you download Rocket League? And it really took storm at that point. And it's really strange that a game like that has built its success off of being a free on 1 month game for one of these services is pretty spectacular. It really speaks volumes to what that label can do to your game. If Microsoft or Sony comes up to you and says, we want you to be our free game for this month, you could go viral. Your game could go essentially viral. And I think this category, it's kind of just up in the air. I mean, I've played Rocket League now. I finally got the chance to experience it, and it's fantastic. But I know the work the NBA 2K team does. I mean, it's phenomenal. It's like watching a real basketball game. Mm-hmm. I know the work that the FIFA team does. It's like the one studio within EA that I really respect, especially on their EA Sports divisions, because I think they handle FIFA fantastically. Yeah. And then you have Forza, which Forza 6 was kind of billed as a return to form, and driving in the rain was, you know, this really, really different thing where the whole track, everything changes now when it starts to rain. So this is a really, I don't think Pro Evolution Soccer has a chance. I think they're way down. There's no way they're going to get up there. I think Rocket League's had a better chance of winning than PES, but
yeah.
This is a really interesting category. I could see totally FIFA or NBA stealing it, and I could I could definitely see Rocket League sneaking up there and just impressing a bunch of people.
I mean, it's nice to not see a football game up here.
Very nice.
For one, you know, no, just throwing in Madden, just to throw in Madden. I wish, although I don't know what else you could have put up there. I wish there were just, you know, if they would have just taken one from each sport, you know, get rid of Pro Evolution Soccer. I guess you would have put in like NHL or something, because just trying to think of another sports or racing game. I mean, it really wasn't another one. Mm-hmm. So, but I like Rocket League's chances, but at the same time, you're right. NBA 2K and FIFA, it's like watching an actual game of real people play instead of a video game. And yeah, I mean, I've never been a big fan of Forza. So, I mean, I could take it or leave it if they actually won, but yeah. I would be enthusiastic if Rocket League would take the best sports game. But I mean, they also have, like I said, they have two other chances to win an award that night. So if it had to go to somebody else, I would probably give it the NBA 2K16, because it just still looks so gorgeous and it's pretty much flawless. Like, and honestly, it's your only other NBA game. It's the only NBA game you can play, really, because what are you going to do? Play NBA Live?
It's getting that's a good point.
5.5s out of 10 and stuff like that.
If you want to measure the success of that franchise, look at their competition. They have wiped the floor. I mean, just absolutely butchered NBA Live to the point where at one point they didn't even release a game 1 year because they were like, we can't do it. We just can't do it. They still can't do it. I don't know why they still release games, but
yeah, I was about to say. I mean, just because they've released it doesn't mean they can still do it, because they keep releasing it and it's still terrible. So, but yeah, I would be okay with NBA 2K16 if Rocket League didn't win. So, let's see. I really don't know about the best family game because, yeah, I don't have any of those games. Disney Infinity 3.0 or anything like that.
This is an interesting one. Best art direction. So best art direction, the nominees are Batman Arkham Knight, Bloodborne, Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, Ori and the Blind Forest, or The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. So you have a comic book game, a dark fantasy game, a Japanese military game, a cartoon come to life, or a fantasy epic. That's pretty interesting art directions for all three of those games. I think the standout ones would be Ori and then The Witcher. Metal Gear Solid 5 is a little more realistic, I think, in terms of its presentation. Bloodborne is... I've actually had a chance to play Bloodborne now. It's a bit too dark fantasy, I think.
Yeah.
But it is still an art direction nonetheless. That's certainly not a game that Call of Duty is going to be looking to emulate, or I guess that'd be a poor example. Battlefield, I'm trying to think of a game that looks hyper-realistic. You know, it's not a game that Battlefield is going to be looking to emulate its art direction from, because Bloodborne is definitely a very specific art style. Mm-hmm. Then you have Arkham Knight, which is very, very strongly comic booky. I mean, it at some points looks like a comic book come to life with its extravagant characters and crazy set pieces. So this is a pretty interesting category. I think I would prefer Ori to win because it is the most extreme of all of those and is the most stylistic. But if Ori did not have a chance to win, I think I would probably want The Witcher to win. What about you?
Just going by what we've seen before and what we haven't seen before, I think Ori and the Blind Forest is something that we really haven't seen much of before.
Right.
So it has a better shot, especially in a category which is called Best Art Direction. So, I mean, and it almost looks like a work of art. Bloodborne, I liked it better when it was Dark Souls and Demon Souls and Dark Souls 2. You know, we've seen this like gothic horror type deal before, and it doesn't look any different. It looks pretty, but it's not Like,
I wouldn't even say it looks new. It doesn't even look that pretty. Finally had a chance to play it, but I mean, it's definitely looks better than Dark Souls, etc. But
yeah,
it's still no Witcher or Metal Gear or anything like that.
No, Arkham Knight, like you said, is definitely a comic book style game. Maybe not to the point where we actually have like little speech bubbles above our heads or anything like that. But it is amazing to look at when it wants to run. And if it does run at the peak speed that it's supposed to run, it looks amazing.
And it's not even that. It's like, it's how the Joker's character model is expressed. It looks like it's right out of the comic book, right? It's not Heath Ledger, which I loved Heath Ledger's Joker. I loved Jack Nicholson's Joker in the movies. It's not that. They're not going for this realistic version of the Joker. It's like the TV show or the comic book has popped out and you're playing in that world, which is what I think makes it such a strong contender for something like this, because that's an art style and they were really effective with the muscles and the chest size on Batman. I mean, they always nail that he is a larger than life figure, even though he's a normal guy. He is a larger than life figure. Even Commissioner Gordon, he's a larger than life figure. He's not quite as tall as Batman, but he's really big, and that's the style that pops out of a comic book when you normally read those. So I think that one's got a shot at it too.
Yeah. Metal Gear Solid is, it's nice to look at, you know, with the different areas that you go to with Afghanistan or Africa. They're really nice to look at and stuff like that. And going back to Mother Base is pretty good. Besides the fact that Mother Base is really sparse, there's not a lot to look at, but it is nice to see a base just float down there in the middle of the ocean. And The Witcher 3, man, it just had a lot going on in it. You know, from forest areas to bustling towns to ports and stuff like that. It was just a lot of stuff to look at, and it was really, really gorgeous.
It was that. You had lots of different enemies. I mean, all the spells, all the mages. Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
But like I said, Ori's just giving us something that we don't see that often.
That's true.
And I'd rather this year be more of the not look at the AAA titles when it comes to certain categories, look at the smaller titles and see how far they've come up from where they used to be, right? Where a title such as Ori and the Blind Forest probably wouldn't even be in best art direction a couple years ago, and now it's actually being considered one of the best looking games of the year. So
it's true.
I mean, that's another one of those titles that's been thrown into a lot of categories this year as well. So
who do you think Ori and the Blind Forest should take that home?
Yeah, I think Ori and the Blind Forest with a close second to, and it'd probably be a tie between Witcher 3 and Arkham Knight, since they're both the, well, technically Arkham Knight's like a fourth title, but they both look pretty good, and they both have those expansive like areas, whereas Arkham Knight's more cityscape, you know, Witcher 3 is more forestscape and stuff like that. So it's really a preference on what you like to look at. Do you prefer looking at tall buildings, you know, spotlights everywhere, great lighting effects, water effects, and all that? Or do you prefer looking at The Witcher 3 when it comes to spells and the trees rustling in the wind and all that stuff, and just all that, you know, all the people that are on screen? And also, I mean, that's another thing that Witcher 3 seems to have over Batman, is that The Witcher 3's areas seem more alive, which allows a better art direction with like drawing the characters that inhabit the city and everything, whereas Batman, it's under a curfew again, so all you get are the same thugs every 20 feet. So, you know, you take what you can, but I would think Ori and the Blind Forest probably has it this year.
All right, let's jump to the Game of the Year category. So the Game of the Year category is filled up with Bloodborne, Fallout 4, Metal Gear Solid 5, Super Mario Maker, and The Witcher Wild Hunt. Now, the one that strikes me as odd is Super Mario Maker. Super Mario Maker is on this list, and it's just like, wait, what? That really is getting a nomination for Game of the Year. Not that I don't want them to get a nomination, but that one just seems strange to me that that they want that that game is that good. A game where you design Mario levels is going to be could be Game of the Year. That's crazy. What do you think of this list?
It is interesting to say the least. You're right. Super Mario Maker is one, that one standout where it's like, why? Huh? Did you really mean to put Super Mario Maker up there? Okay, well, it's up here now. The other four, actually, I would almost say the other three, because I don't know about Bloodborne being on this list either.
I agree. Bloodborne is a little weird to me as well.
It's interesting because it's a PS4 exclusive game. You know, I'm wondering that... Was that the reasoning why Bloodborne and Super Mario Maker are up here? Because they were both exclusive titles?
Well, it makes me wonder, does someone think that Bloodborne is better than Halo 5? Which it may be. Maybe people do believe that. But, like, generally you see Halo 5 is a shoe-in for Game of the Year. Not necessarily the winner, but at least a nomination. And you see Bloodborne. You don't see Halo on this list, yet you see Bloodborne and Super Mario Maker. And you don't see things like Rocket League on there either. And you get Bloodborne, though, which is, I agree, is definitely a little strange. And I don't know why. I can't really put my finger on it.
I mean, I'm going to guess that with certain games, you don't want to put them up there because, okay, they're like with Batman, you don't want to put that up there because it was a technical disaster on PC.
Agreed.
Whereas Bloodborne, I don't think too many people had any problems with it.
I mean, the long loading times in the beginning, but Fallout 4 had the same loading times when it came out.
I was about to say, Fallout 4, Metal Gear Solid 5, Witcher 3 didn't actually have extraordinary loading times either. So, I mean, you know, loading times are loading times. With Game of the Year, the thing of it is that there's so many things that you got to consider with Game of the Year. Did it run great? I mean, was the launch successful? Does it have a narrative that you're wanting to follow all the way to the end, or is it just enjoyable? Like Super Mario Maker, there is no narrative. You just make levels and see people run through them, but it's enjoyable to see people to create stuff and see people run through it. It's basically this year's Minecraft for Nintendo, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's seeing people it's the Minecraft / the Little Big Planet. You know, it's like making your own maps and giving them to people to see if they can make it through there, showing your creative side. Like, this is a creative masterpiece when it comes to people that have been wanting to make a Mario game, but, you know you can't. There's too many hurdles to get to being able to make a Mario game. But this is giving everybody the chance to do something they've always dreamed of doing, is making a Mario game. Maybe they didn't like the levels in Super Mario 3 and wanted to tweak them a little bit. Or some of the newer Marios have been kind of hit or miss. They've just been, you know, whatever. So maybe they want to do something better with those. So I'm just trying to make a case for Super Mario Maker being on this list. Because none of the other ones, Witcher 3, Metal Gear Solid 5, and Fallout 4 need a case. They're all great games. They're all Game of the Years because they all have those things that I talked about, narratives that you have to follow, that you want to follow and keep playing. They have gameplay that makes it interesting for you to keep playing as well. It doesn't get boring and tedious for the most part. And they pretty much all launch smoothly. So, I mean, you got to get over that hump of launching smoothly before you even consider Game of the Year. And that's why things like Batman, Call of Duty, and you know what? I'm going to guess why Halo 5's not on this list is because it is the middle part of a trilogy. I don't remember Halo 2 being on the list of Game of the Year, if they ever did Game of the Year back then. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but did you really love the Halo 2 story?
It wasn't that great, no.
Okay, and that's pretty much what I've been hearing about Halo 5, is that it is the Halo 2 of this year, of this generation right now. Whereas the middle part of a story, you know, Halo 6 will be where it's at. Halo 6 will be the Halo 3 of its generation, where, you know, you're finishing that fight, basically. So we can see Halo 6 being on this list maybe next year, or not next year, but, you know, whenever it comes out. Yeah, a few years. So, but Halo 5 didn't need to be on this list because maybe the narrative wasn't to the point where people wanted to have it up here. You know?
Yeah. What do you, what's your prediction? What do you think is going to win Game of the Year for Game Awards?
For this, I'd probably have to say Witcher 3.
Yeah.
Because Fallout 4 is too new. And Metal Gear Solid 5, like I said, is one of the weaker of the Metal Gear Solid 5s. It's fun to The weaker of the Metal Gear Solids, it's fun to play, but the story is just like, really?
Yeah, I think
that's what we're going for. So
I think Bloodborne is more of a niche game as well as Super Mario Maker. I think Metal Gear Solid 5 was just too many question marks. I felt like every time I heard someone talk about that game, they were expressing the same joys that something like The Witcher and Fallout brings you, but they were also expressing so many more question marks as to, you know, what the hell is going on and who are these characters and what am I supposed to do and I have to do this again and blah blah blah. Whereas with Fallout 4 and The Witcher, I feel like you have very smartly crafted universes, worlds to play in. You have intelligent characters. You have characters who will talk talk a lot. And I think you have really tight, focused narratives, especially with The Witcher, that kind of appeal to larger audiences that I don't believe Bloodborne, Mario Maker, or Metal Gear Solid 5 is capable of doing. So I think you're right. I think it's probably going to go to The Witcher, but I cannot discredit Bethesda and the voodoo that they put over the games industry whenever they release a new game, because it seems like with Skyrim, with Oblivion, with Fallout 3, they just snap their fingers and boom, they get every Game of the Year award on the planet. So you can't underestimate Bethesda. And as much as I disagree with a lot of their game styles and the fact that they get game awards, you got to admit that they really know how to bring it when it comes to these award shows. And there's a very good chance Fallout 4 wins Game of the Year for the Game Awards. I could totally see it doing it. But I agree. I think Witcher 3 probably will win because that's something that's pretty special. But yeah, do not discredit Bethesda and Fallout 4, because I could totally see them steal this.
It wouldn't be much of a steal. It'd be true. Yeah. I mean, either one could win, and it wouldn't be a steal from either one. It'd be a steal from Bloodborne or Super Mario Maker.
That's true.
But any of the other three could win, and it'd be okay. I mean, everybody would be okay with it. There would be some grumblings, but, you know.
It's not like last year when Dragon Age won, and I was like, WTF?
Oof, Dragon Age Inquisition. Man, why?
When Shadow of Mordor, they got it right when they did the Game Developers Awards later. They were like, yeah, Shadow of Mordor was the best game. Come on. but yeah, the Game Awards will air again. That's 9 p.m. Eastern Time this coming Thursday, December 3rd. And you can check it out on Xbox Live, Steam, PlayStation Network, Wii U's internet dashboard service, YouTube, Twitch, all of those platforms you can check it out. So, without further delay, let's get away from the Game Awards. Let's move to the VG Cast Game of the Year discussion. Troy, we are going to break this down into our top three, starting with number three. So number one being the best, number one being our personal favorite game of the year. Mm-hmm. But spliced in between one and two and two and three, we're going to give a couple honorable mentions. So that means you get five total games to talk about. Number three, your number three favorite game of the year, your first honorable mention, your number two favorite game of the year, your second honorable mention, and then boom, last, number one game of the year. Troy, do you want to go first? We'll start with number three. What was your third favorite game from 2015?
Oh, I'm going to get so much crap for this. It is... it's going to be...
Drum roll!
I'm sorry, Bethesda. I'm sorry to do this to you. Ooh, it's Fallout 4.
Dropping a bomb early.
Yeah, it's Fallout 4 for number three. Because
ironic that I said dropping a bomb. Never mind. Oh wow, number three. Why? What happened?
Nothing happened. Nothing happened at all.
Did your game crash?
No.
Okay.
No. There was that one time where I thought a quest had glitched out, but it didn't.
Wow, things have just gotten interesting. I thought for sure that was going to be number one.
Oh, no. No. Fallout 4, number three. It's nothing wrong with Fallout 4.
It's just an up year for other games, right?
That and Fallout 4 came out so late in the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I played a lot of it so far, but I've played other games a lot more. And sure. Then there's a game up there in my top, in the rest of the top two, that you don't play that much of it, but
the impression that's left is more powerful than what Fallout has left in you right now.
Exactly. And there's some things in Fallout 4 I just don't like. Like I said, the dialogue is kind of terrible. They don't really give you an idea of what you're going to say unless you mod the game. You know, you don't know if you're going to say something completely and utterly over the top or something, you know, kind of sincere.
Right.
And if it kind of takes away from you playing a role-playing game if you don't know what you're going to say. Because a lot of people put themselves deep into a role-playing game.
That's true.
So if they don't know what they're going to say, that takes them out of the game entirely. So, and it kind of took me out of the game. It's like, I want to play a good guy character, but with some sarcastic wit, but when my sarcasm is going to be like completely and utterly from left field, you know, like morbid sarcasm or something like that, I don't want to say it. And I wouldn't want to say it, and I didn't know I was going to say that if I would have had like a better dialogue option. I'm not saying put the whole thing in like Fallout 3, just put a little bit of a snippet there and let me go from there.
Right.
But like I said, and it's just, I haven't been able to play a lot of it. You know, it just came out this month. So like 2 weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not my game of the year. That's all.
That's good points. I think I for the most part agree. There's nothing that you said that makes me go, well, that's just ridiculous. So I think you bring up some good points, and you know, it's something that if it doesn't leave that strong of an impression, then of course it's not going to be your most memorable, your favorite game of the year. My number three is actually going to be Tomb Raider. This is a game very similar to your points. I just haven't had enough time. I feel like if I put more time into this game, it probably would beat out for sure another game on this my list, and maybe both games on this list, because I look at it as that impressive of a game. It's remarkable. It goes to show that just because Microsoft paid for the rights for them to get this on one platform and one platform only, it doesn't have to be a disaster. They may have potentially avoided an Arkham Knight situation by doing that, because what they're able to do then is polish that one experience. So there are no glitches or save bugs or anything like that. And you get a very tight narrative as well as kind of an open world experience here. You don't have to worry so much about your choices and your decisions and what's going to affect this. You kind of are told and guided along a story that has all of these different branches that allow you to go off and explore at your own leisure when you want to, but come back to this very strong and fairly beautiful story. Like I said, I haven't spent a lot of time with it, but I've been able to experience it through my fiance. From the ground up, this game is polished beyond comprehension almost. I mean, everything from the sound design to the sound mapping to the control. I think this game has better combat than any of the Uncharted games. And maybe you can make the argument, well, that's not saying much, or you could say, well, that's saying a lot, depending on your taste for the Uncharted games. But I think this game's combat is wildly satisfying. It also, in a way, gives you choice as well, where you don't have to be the murderer that straps bombs to the backs of people's bodies. You can just shoot them in the chest or knock them out unconscious if you really wanted to. So it kind of gives you your own choice in how do you want to attack these people. But then the game opens up with all the hunting and the crafting and the skills that you want to upgrade. And It is a really, really impressive game. All of the cutscenes seem to be in-engine, so what you're wearing transfers into the cutscenes. Unlike with Halo 5, where if you're using a rocket launcher or a pistol or a sniper rifle, boom, you get magically granted an assault rifle for the cutscenes, which is just bizarre, and I hate it when they do that. But yeah, all the cutscenes in Tomb Raider seem to be in-engine and powered by the models that you're actually playing with, and I think that's a pretty impressive thing. This game just kind of blew my mind when I first started playing it, when I first started watching my fiance play it, and I couldn't believe it was as good as it was, because the previous one was a good game. I didn't think it was the greatest game ever or of that year even, but it was certainly a fantastic game, but I just did not see this one going to be as good as it was. And boy, if only Fallout had not come out this year, I think more people, because I think it's a shame more people aren't talking about this game, because it is truly fantastic. What did you think? Did you think Tomb Raider is pretty good, Troy?
It's actually in my honorable mention for this year.
Okay. Is it your first honorable mention or your second honorable mention?
Actually, it's my first. I would say.
Okay, let's get jump right to your honorable mention. You can go ahead and talk about Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I mean, oh man, Tomb Raider. It's so gorgeous. It plays well. It plays perfectly. And you're right. It is a better version of Uncharted in certain aspects. Especially the fact that, you know, in Uncharted, it seems like I don't know if you're actually trying to treasure hunt or not. Whereas in Tomb Raider, you are actually treasure hunting in Tomb Raider, really. It seems like it. I mean, you're looking at monoliths and translating this stuff, and you know, you're actually taking a look into history with some of the stuff. With things like Uncharted, they really don't tell you anything. You pick up an item and that's it. Like, they don't give you, like, you don't have a voiceover from Nathan Drake saying what it is or anything like that. Or at least I don't remember. But when it comes to Tomb Raider, when you pick up an item, you know, she'll talk about it. If there's something on it or something, you can swing it around and it'll bring up another little tidbit of information. And it's just incredible. You're right.
So what is it about this game that you think didn't allow it to make it onto your top three list? Is it something the game did, or is it another case like Fallout where it was just there were other things that came out that you feel like were better than it, and not necessarily that it was a bad game, or something happen you didn't like?
It's sad to say this, but it almost takes a beat for beat from the first one in certain aspects. Because you were talking about how your girlfriend had reached a point where, maybe I shouldn't say this. I don't know if I should say this or not. Spoilers, everybody. Spoilers, 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 spoilers. Give you like 2 minutes to come back to this. That she reached the point where there were these guys, these really scary looking guys in there. It's almost the same thing from the first one. You know, remember then the first one that they were the scary samurai guards in there? It's almost the exact same thing. Like, I was saying that when I was finishing the game. It's like, man, this is almost the exact same way this was from the first game. There are some tweaks, but they're almost the exact same thing. And I don't know if that just means that there's a lot of different just never dying people around or something like that that's guarding major treasure, but just seems like, oh man, every time Laura goes to find something, there's an immortal army standing in her way or something. Like, maybe you should stop doing this, because, you know, yeah, the bad guys are killing all your friends, but this immortal army, they're terrible. Maybe stop looking for stuff, because you keep running into these guys and it's going to bring about the doom of the world if you keep trying to find this stuff. And I mean, that was the only bad thing about it, is that it just took some story beats from the first game and brought it into the second game, when the second game kind of needed to be a thing on its own. And the only other thing that bothered me is that when we first got announced the Rise of the Tomb Raider game, it seemed like Laura was going through some post-traumatic stress. Like, you know, you have that trailer of her talking to a therapist about what had been going on in that first game.
Right.
It doesn't seem like she, it doesn't seem like none of that stuff's really affecting her too much in this one.
She definitely looks like a stone cold killer.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's either kill or be killed in this one. And she doesn't seem to have any remorse for it too much. There are some points where it does look like it a little bit, but from the way that trailer played out, it's like she doesn't really like to kill too often.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of, it makes a little bit of sense because after the first game, you see, you kind of saw, granted it was a fast transition, but you saw the evolution from her being a non-killer to her becoming a killer, right? So the game, that game's purpose was to kind of set that up. But then you get to this game, and it's like so extreme. Like there's moments where your additional party member, your companion person, is forced to kill or asked to kill someone, and they're like hesitating and they don't want to do it. But Lara's like, just do it. I do it all the time. What's the big deal? Boom, boom, boom. Like, let's go. Let's go murder some more people. And it gets a little off-putting in those moments because it's like, wait, what? This Lara's turned into the Terminator. Like, that's what she's become. She's, I'm on a mission to find the treasure. I will terminate everyone. And it's just, that's all she's programmed to do. So I understand your point there. It does seem a little strange at times.
But
hey, it's a video game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we could ask the same thing of freaking Uncharted. I mean, Drake.
That's true.
But he just doesn't seem to care either, so.
He just makes jokes about it the whole time.
Yeah, he really doesn't have a moral compass when it comes to killing people too much.
I'm not sure he has a moral compass.
No, you're right. Hanging out with Sully would do that to you, but.
That's true.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, that was my runner-up. That was my first runner-up.
All right. Well, I guess, let's see, yours was Fallout and then Tomb Raider, your runner-up. Mine was Tomb Raider as my number three. My honorable mention, I'm going to cheat just a second here because I'm going to accidentally mention, actually, it's not accidentally, this is going to be on purpose, but purposefully mention another game that was removed from this list. That was Arkham Knight. I talked about that a little bit earlier. I was going to have Arkham Knight as my honorable mention, but it got its ass rocketed off of that list when I got a chance to finally play Rocket League. And I don't think this is one of my top three games of the year because I literally just started it. But boy, if I had a month at this game, it might be my number one favorite game. This game, Rocket League, is so fantastic. It is worth every single praise it is getting, I think. Of course, there is no single-player campaign. There's none of that crazy crap. It is just a sports game. But you like a sports game, you can do seasons. You can do 2v2, 4v4, 3v3. They have mutations now, which change the ball to a square, or rather a cube, which makes it not roll at all. It just kind of flops around. They have mutations, which can change the gravity, make your cars go faster. They have all these different crazy things. Tutorials, they have exhibition, they have private matches, public matches, ranked matches. Everything is buttery smooth. The matchmaking is virtually instantaneous. They have PC to PlayStation 4 cross-platform play. Now, they don't have party support for that, so you can't play on PC with your friends on PS4. But if you randomly get assigned into their games, then obviously, of course, you can. But that way, the player base is much larger than if you were just on one platform, which is great. And boy, is it fun. The matches are quick. They're not these overly drawn out, you know, games that you might run into if you're not a huge fan of Madden or FIFA or NBA 2K. If you don't really want to sit in it, even those games, they're not really that long because they shorten up the time in between the quarters, in between the halves, etc. So they don't really feel as long as they do on television. And a lot of times their quarters are even reduced in times. But Rocket League, it's only like a four minutes and you're done with each match. There's no timeouts, obviously. None of that crazy stuff. And boy, is it fun. It is wildly fun. You unlock new cars. You unlock new tires. You unlock new decals, new paint jobs, new effects with your engine. So if you're boosting, it shoots green flames or blue flames or sparkles or water bubbles and antenna. There are all these different crazy things that you can collect, but just having a really good time doing it. Had I played it before yesterday for the first time or the day before, that may be my game of the year. But for now, it's my first honorable mention. Definitely recommend anybody out there who has not tried it on PC or PS4 to certainly try out Rocket League. I think it's on sale on PSN right now for $11, but I would not be surprised if it's on sale on Steam as well. So definitely check that game out. Is it on sale?
Mm-hmm. $13.99.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yep. Not surprised. Actually, that is very surprising. That's you just started playing it yesterday, so yeah, it's very surprising.
I was going to talk about Arkham Knight and how impressive the Joker's storyline was, and the whole story, and yada yada yada, and how much I don't like the PC was so horrible, but underneath it was a good game. But no, Rocket League just comes flying in, knocks that game right off the list.
Jesus Christ! Wow. And thought mine. My Fallout 4 was big or something. You just bring out Rocket League. You've only played a day.
Hey, and a half. I've experienced a lot.
Okay. I'm not going to argue.
Hey, I've played more of Rocket League than I've played of Tomb Raider.
Yeah, well, you're right. No, I mean, that makes sense to be ahead of Tomb Raider. Well, that technically it didn't get ahead of Tomb Raider.
That's true.
Because it's an honorable mention. So
I still think Tomb Raider is technically a better game than Rocket League. But boy, is Rocket League fun. Oh my gosh. All right, Troy, you're number two game of the year.
All right. So anything that's above Fallout 4 is going to be just, you know, blasphemy, apparently. But I'm actually going with our friends from Telltale and putting Tales from the Borderlands at number two.
You get the hell out of here.
Nope.
Where's Troy?
Nope.
This is not even...
Yep.
What the hell?
Nope. Tales from the Borderlands, number two.
Telltale game?
Yep, it's great. Remember when a Telltale game won Game of the Year with Walking Dead?
Are you feeling okay? Are you the one that's sick? Is it not?
No, Tales from the Borderlands.
Wow.
It has a better narrative than Fallout 4. Which,
explain, yeah.
Okay. I love the Borderlands little series, like the location that it's thrown into, a post-apocalyptic planet. You know, alien planet for, you know, not just Earth or anything. It's an alien planet full of all sorts of life forms and stuff on it. And throw that into a story-driven game from Telltale, and you got me. I'm already dead to rights sold on it. This game was funny. It was probably the funniest game I've played in a very long time. It was clever, very clever with the puns, the just throwaway lines, some of the art direction and stuff, the twists and turns of the story were just were clever. And it had me on the edge of my seat from episodes 1 through 5.
Wow.
Every episode I played, I wanted to play the other one. So I'm glad I went through and just replayed the whole thing after my save got eaten anyway. But I replayed the whole thing, and I mean, that might be the killer right there of why it's not number one, is because my save got eaten from the first time I tried to play it. Ooh. But, okay, no, it wouldn't have been number one, even if my save didn't get eaten, so don't worry about that. But it had great voice acting, strong, very strong music. Like, if we got to talk about soundtracks, it would have... I don't even actually think it was on the soundtracks list. Nope, it wasn't. Never mind. But it does have a strong soundtrack to it as well. And that's something that helps with a video game for me. If it has great music behind it, I can keep playing it. You know, if the music's terrible, I'm either not going to be paying attention to it because I'm going to be listening to something else, or I don't want to play it too often or too long without the music playing in the background or something like that. So, but it was one of those games that was nearly perfect, minus a couple of hits and, you know, a little bit of misses out there. The fact that it took so long for the whole game to come out kind of sucks, but hey, I have to give it to them on Telltale. They actually made something that almost beats out Walking Dead Season 1 for me.
Wow.
Almost. I mean, like I said, when you have Nolan North and Patrick Warburton and Chris Hardwick and Troy Baker in this game, it's great. And Handsome Jack's back. And I loved Handsome Jack from the second game. Loved how much of a jerk he was. So I loved this game. So, hey, it's my number two.
Well, that was definitely out of left field.
It was. What did you think I was going to say? Mad Max?
Hey, maybe. That was a solid game.
Hey, well, no. Not game of the year solid.
My number two, you know, yours made me want to fall out of my chair. My number two, actually, is Fallout. That game, woo, let me tell you. I don't know what it is about that game and that game's soundtrack and everything that goes along with that game. It just... Can you hear that?
Yes, I can hear it. I was like, man, is his phone ringing or something? Nope, there it goes.
I have that on my Rhapsody because I listen to that song virtually every single day. Look, this game is not perfect, not by any means. I'm at the point now where I'm starting to get kind of bored with the game. I'll admit that. It is not without its own fault, for sure. But there is a certain magic about this game that, personally, I just can't escape. That's why I was very careful to claim these are our own personal favorite games. That's why Troy has something like Tales of Borderlands on there. He loves that game. To me, I hated Fallout 3. I just could not get past that game. But there's something magic about Fallout 4, even with its problems. I still get up in the morning and come into my office/spare bedroom and start boot this game up. And when that game kicks on and the loading screen ends and I'm in that world, I smile almost every single time because it is so vibrant. And it seems, although it's dead in that world, it seems alive and there's stories to be told. And while my biggest gripe with that game is the fact that I feel no penalty for not going to look for the person I'm supposed to be looking for, which ties back to what you said earlier about Tomb Raider being a little bit like its predecessor, you kind of make the same case for Fallout story. You know, Fallout 3 story, you were looking for your dad. Fallout 4, you're looking for another person that is really kind of similar.
You can to that say whole what thing. It is.
I guess so. Light spoiler, you find this out 5 minutes into the game. Exactly. You are looking for your son. So, I mean, the game is, the storyline, I guess you could say, is very similar. It's a quest for a loved one, just like the first one was, or the third one was, the predecessor to this one. So I understand that gripe. I understand that there's, if this was your real life situation, I can't imagine anyone that we know or have known or talked to would go research settlements and talk to the Silver Shroud superhero or whatever before going to save their own child.
No, I did.
So, but yet I'm doing that. I'm ignoring the main quest because they don't line out what the main quest is. I mean, I can tell which one is the main quest, but they're just quests. And every time I go and do one quest, I get another one or maybe two. And so I'm running along this world doing all of these things, but in the back of my mind thinking I'm a horrible person because I'm not going to get my my next of kin. And I feel like that's a big negative for the game, but also a big positive. This game really lets you be you. If you just want to go plant crops at your 15 settlements, well, go do it. If you just want to go raid every single building in downtown Boston or across the Commonwealth, go do it. If you want to investigate the Institute or become a Brotherhood of Steel or what have you, go do it. You can do any of those things. And if you really, really wanted to, you can just shoot whoever you want. You can do the VATS thing. Just start lighting people up. So I love that this game gives you so much choice. However, at the end of the day, I feel like that level of choice holds it back from being my personal game of the year. And I think is likely going to hold it back from other people's games of the year. But I have to also commend them. They've done a really good job with this version. Yes, there have been some bugs, but for the most part, this is not a Bethesda game. Because Bethesda game is glitchy and usually what Assassin's Creed Unity looks like. But that's not what has happened with this game. This game seems to be running pretty well. They do have some issues on the consoles. you and I were both lucky enough to get this game on PC and haven't really had too many issues, I don't think.
Mm-mm.
So I got to commend him for that. Normally the Bethesda games are just an abomination. But yeah, man, this game has been, right from the start, has been in my mind. And even a recent purchaser of a PlayStation 4, I still can't really put this game down. But I do see the point coming. I actually just recently had a conversation with my fiance about this, claiming I kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel for this game's time in my mind. Because I'm getting sick of getting new establishments or settlements. I'm getting sick of getting more quests on top of more quests whenever I do another quest. And the easy answer to that, as she even recommended, is just go beat the main campaign and see where it takes you. And I know that. That's what I want to do. But when I get in the game, I'm just like, well, I'll just go over here. Or I'll go talk to this guy. Oh, I got a new settlement? Well, let's go ahead and put a beacon up and... Might as well put some fencing in a place for them to have beds in case more people show up, and might as well give them some water and some turrets and some power. And yeah, so I go down the rabbit hole every time I boot that game up. So, but it is, I think it's a fantastic game. I think it's one of, if not the best Bethesda game that they've ever made, in my opinion. I didn't like Skyrim. I didn't really like Oblivion. I didn't like Morrowind. I didn't like Fallout 3. And I think Fallout 4 is one of the best they've ever done, but still not my number one. Troy, you already talked about Fallout 4, so we don't really need to dive into your conversation on that. So let's jump to your next honorable mention, number two.
Oh, well, this was a tough one.
This was a tough one, wasn't it?
Because you got Batman, you got Mortal Kombat X, because that came out this year. If you wanted to throw in Battlefield Hardline, maybe, I don't know. You know, I didn't play Halo 5 because I could throw that one in, but I'm actually just going to go ahead and say Assassin's Creed Syndicate is my second runner-up because it's Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Yeah, there's pretty much nothing else to do that. Actually, it's because it's way better than Unity. It's gone back to what it used to be before it got super convoluted and just lost its way, I guess. Actually, I think it lost its way back in Assassin's Creed 3, but it's gotten to a point where it wants to reinvent itself back to where it used to be, and I enjoyed the hell out of this game. Haven't finished it, but I have enjoyed most of it. You know, it could be... No, I probably might get to the end and the ending might be terrible, and then I'll just be highly upset with myself. But from what I've played of it, Syndicate is really, really, really good. I love the characters in it with Jacob and Evie. I like the different play styles that they tend to have. Evie's more stealthy, Jacob's more... punch people in the face, ask questions later, punch them again for getting the wrong answers. You know, it's not focusing too much on the present time. It's mostly focusing on them. It's mostly focusing on the assassins. That's pretty much what it should be. There's a time and place for that little present stuff, and they do it, but it's mostly in cinematics. So, you don't really have to worry about playing anything in the future. You don't have that weird first person view thing that you had to do in like Black Flag and stuff like that. So, like I said, this is just a game coming back to what it needed to be. And I thoroughly enjoyed the fact that it decided to be an Assassin's Creed game again, instead of a, hey, get your buddies and try and assassinate people, you know, type of multiplayer and, you know, chests that you can't open unless a certain thing has become available or something like that. I didn't understand Unity whatsoever. And at least this game came out pretty much smooth. No hiccups, no people's faces disappearing or, you know, having to have an online connection most of the time to open certain chests. But, you know, out of the other games that it could have been, I am glad I chose Assassin's Creed Syndicate as my other runner up out of this.
That is a that's a game that I've been waiting. That and Metal Gear Solid 5 as well. Not waiting just for what any particular reason other than I just have other games to play. But Assassin's Creed Syndicate is one I've had my eyeball on for a long time because I could see a year ago, maybe not a year ago, it was probably months ago when they were showing, because a year ago they were still all up their butt with Unity, but probably 6 to 8 months ago when they were showing this game off, and that you could tell that they were going back to their roots. They were going kind of returning back to their form that they may have had in Assassin's Creed 2 and maybe Brotherhood. It seemed like a tighter narrative-focused game. It seemed like a tighter Assassin's Creed game that all of the bloatware had been stripped away from, and all of the extra NPCs, the four-player co-op, all of that crazy stuff that they were trying to throw in the faces in order to be like, look, this is new gen. They kind of removed that. They pulled that back. They removed the multiplayer, all of it, even the PvP stuff. They lowered the NPC count in the world in order to make sure this engine doesn't struggle and buckle under the weight like Unity did. And it really speaks volumes. This is a game that I looked at strongly. I'm looking at it right now. It's $25 for PC on cdkeys.com. So that I'm not going to buy it now because I got a whole bunch of games to play. But yeah, that's one that I definitely want to be playing. And hopefully I get to it sooner rather than later. So good choice. Good choice, sir. I'm glad to see that make its way to one of our honorable mentions. I'm going to talk about my second honorable mention, which is going to come straight out of left field, perhaps right field, whichever one you prefer. It's called Dying Light.
Are you serious? Get out.
I almost forgot about this game.
Yeah, almost exactly. That's why.
I almost forgot about this game. This thing came out in, like, what, February, March?
February.
Look, this isn't my top games of the year, but I felt like of all the games that I played, this was one I needed to talk about at least one more time because I feel like it got overlooked. I wasn't a fan of Dead Island. Certainly wasn't a fan of Dead Island 2. I wasn't even a fan of Left 4 Dead series that much. I thought they were okay at best. Boy, there is something pretty interesting about this game that supported four-player co-op. It launched on all the major platforms with no issues. The graphics are beautiful. The story, while not, it's not the Green Mile of any in any sense of the word. It's not The Witcher. It's not even Tomb Raider or Rise of the Tomb Raider. The story made sense. It was interesting enough. It was compelling to get through. You had a day and night cycle that was effective because what happened in the daytime was not necessarily what happened in the nighttime. At nighttime, boy, you better watch out because there are some strong enemies that are coming out at nighttime. And the development of that engine, that day and night cycle, was so intuitive that you could find the enemies that come out at night during the day, but they were hidden away in tunnels or parking garages, that kind of thing, to get away from the sunlight. So you could find those creatures. They didn't just magically appear out of nowhere when the nighttime sky came. They came from certain locations and you could find them. You could climb skyscrapers. There were all of these secrets. There was a memorial for a boy who died from cancer in that game. I mean, I think the developers really polished this game. And while some people may think it's a turd, this is a game that was really polished. It was really fun, especially if you played with your friends. And I can't say enough about it, really. I had a blast playing it. I played all the way to the end, something I can't say for a lot of these games that I played throughout the year. I don't even know if I'm going to make it through Fallout 4. So that's something that tells you something right there. I wanted to get all the way through Dying Light. That I did have one big problem with it. It was four-player co-op. It was designed for four-player co-op from start to finish, asterisk, because the very end of the game, for some odd reason, denies you four-player co-op. So when you get to that very end, the very, very last point, the last 10, 15 minutes, the game does not let you be four-player co-op, which I thought was bizarre. It like encourages it for so long throughout this game. But it had a crafting system. It had interesting enemies. Yes, they were just zombies, but there were multitudes of different zombies. They had, you know, police vans that you could bust open on the ground. They had ambulances you could bust open. They had all of these things. It was the game that they wanted to make Dead Island be that they couldn't get to make years ago. They were finally able to make that game. And I thought it was really, really well done. Certainly not Game of the Year contender, but I still think it was a game that was worth mentioning again before the year gets closed out. So Dying Light is my number two honorable mention. Not necessarily higher or lower than Rocket League in terms of when I mentioned it as a honorable mention, but I just wanted to mention that game again because I thought that game was pretty solid. So if Troy can pick his jaw up off the floor, we'll like to go on to the finale, the game of the year. Troy, you ready for that?
Yeah, I guess.
All right.
I guess I can handle that now. Jesus Christ. For real, dude. Dying Light out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. Hey, you had Tales of the Borderlands on there as your number two overall.
That mine makes sense.
All right, man. What's your finale? Your number one, the game you had the most fun with, your favorite game, your game of the year.
You do realize our number one games are probably going to be the same thing, right?
They could be, which would be great if they are.
Because you know what I'm going to say.
I don't know. Now that you said Tales of the Borderlands,
no,
who knows?
It's going to be Witcher 3.
It's got to be Witcher 3.
Yeah, exactly. It's Witcher 3.
It's got to be Witcher 3.
It's so much time
tell
went
the
into that.
Tell the casters why it's Witcher 3 and not Fallout.
Because I've put in way more time in The Witcher 3 than I did in the Fallout so far. Because Witcher 3 is a story narrative that I've followed since Witcher 1 and wanted to see concluded in Witcher 3. And it wasn't a Mass Effect 3 type situation where I have felt disappointed and unsatisfied. I actually enjoyed the ending of Witcher 3.
To put it in perspective, people who don't know, because I know there's some people out there listening who don't know.
Fallout 3 ending was crap.
Mass Effect was an RPG designed by BioWare,
yeah,
where they literally named the game after the marketing scheme they threw down gamers' throats, calling it, all of your decisions would massively affect this game's ending. So they called it Mass Effect. And by the third game, the end of the trilogy, you know how many things you influenced? Like zero. You got two endings. That's what Troy's talking about. We're not talking about the end of a trilogy that lied to you for three games. No, no, no. This was a trilogy that wrapped it up beautifully.
Exactly. Man, where else is there? Like I said, the game is absolutely gorgeous. Even on the console versions are gorgeous. I'm pretty sure Brad got to play it on the PC, which means it was looking much, much better. But on the console, it still looked pretty great. The gameplay wise, it was almost as smooth as butter for most of it. They got rid of most of the jankiness from the other Witcher titles. So hooray for that. Cause I remember combat and the other ones were kind of terrible. This one, you actually have a chance, except on the harder difficulties. The harder difficulties, not so much, but right now on this one, you do have a chance and it is fun to play. I like playing games when you have to have melee weapons for the most part. This is my Shadow of Mordor when it comes to this for this year. Shadow of Mordor had mostly, you know, sword. You could use a bow sometimes, but a sword was the most effective way of killing people. Sword's the most effective way of killing people in this game. Whether it's silver or steel, it's the most effective way of killing people in this game, or monsters, or what have you. And let's not get me started on the narrative. Don't get me started on the voice acting. Just the story in general is, it's great. It actually has a story that you can follow. Fallout.
That's true. And it's not even, it has the great story, but it also has the encyclopedia to back it up if you need assistance. So if you go, what the hell is a Noonwraith? Well, you go into your little library thing and you look up what a Noonwraith is. Or if you go, who the hell is Emperor Amir? You have an encyclopedia article right there. You don't have to go to Bungie.net. Yeah, I'm going to call you out, Destiny, and look up a freaking card and read some extra information on a website. No, 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 no. You look it up inside the game. You have your own personal encyclopedia that the character, Geralt, that you play, he knows who Emperor Amir is. But if you don't know, you can look through, essentially, Geralt's encyclopedia and learn these things in case you haven't played the other games. That is so critically important in order to tell such a complex political narrative that they're explaining, which is essentially what's going on behind the doors of what Geralt is trying to do. And on top of that, you have this fruitful story of Geralt looking for a girl who's, what would be the best way to describe it? Like his little sister or daughter? Probably more like daughter. A little daughter, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's looking for a girl who is essentially his daughter, who looks like him, who idolizes him, who fights like him, who acts like him. And it's kind of, it's not necessarily it's not the same as the Fallout 4 character looking for his son, who has no idea where his son is or will be. Geralt knows, okay, this girl was last seen at this area. I know that. You started the game, you know she was last seen in this area. So you go to move towards that area, and doing the side quests don't exactly make you feel like you're doing something wrong. They don't do that because you're a Witcher. You have to, in that world, get money in order to travel to up here, in order to do this thing, in order to get this person to talk to you, to tell you what he saw about Ciri. And so it kind of makes sense. And you mentioned the combat. Good God, the combat is so satisfying. The world is satisfying. It breathes. The trees sway. In Fallout, everything is dead. And sure, the red car next to, you know, a blown up bus tells a story, or the chair and a baseball bat on top of the roof tells a story. But the entire world with The Witcher is alive. There's wildlife. There's monsters. There's people roaming through. There's gay people. There's black people. There's women who are getting beaten. There's monsters inhabiting holes. I mean, they go on and on. It's in a living, breathing world, essentially, that just, it made me go, wow, every time I played that game. That wasn't easy. I don't know how easy it was for you, but when I, looking back on this list, I was like, the first one I wrote down was The Witcher 3. It was a no-brainer.
Yeah, no, it was already my number one. I even told some people on like Xbox Live just talking about the show. It's like, yeah, that's my number one. Like, actually trying to figure it out, it was like, nope, there's no other game I could put as my number one. You know, there'd be hard to find, you know, spots for the other two games for the list and stuff like that. Well, the other four games for the list, but number one was easily The Witcher 3.
Yeah. Everything about that game, man, I mean, character customization, skills, item management. Now, they did overhaul the item management a couple of weeks into it, but the item management was not that bad before. It's not...
Not Fallout bad?
It's not Fallout bad. Yeah, I guess that's a good point. There's no UI problems or interface problems with that game. You know, it works on just about every front it attempted to work on. And I know there were problems initially about that game. People saying, well, it was promised to look this pretty and look like this on next-gen consoles. The developer bit off more than they can chew. I'm not suggesting that that's okay, but I am suggesting that the developers are allowed to make mistakes. And in this case, the whole conspiracy that they lied to the gamers, I think, is a little ridiculous. They certainly bit off more than they could chew. They promised a game that looked better than they eventually released. However, a lot of those supposedly in-game cutscenes and cinematics they showed, certain elements look better now than they did back then, like Geralt's facial animations, etc. The lighting of the world, the shadows actually look better than they did in that original. So I'm not suggesting that that's okay, that they did what they did. I'm just saying that you got to cut them a little bit of slack, especially going into a multi-platform release, two new consoles, as well as all the new technology that's on the PC front. I cut them a little bit of slack for that. But yeah, man, the horseback riding, the way your horse moves, I mean, is wildly intuitive. The fact that every time you go back, maybe not every time, but almost every time you go back to one of these towns, something new is happening. I mean, there was one town with the Baron in it who I swear every time I went back there, it seemed as if there was some new thing going on where the guards were corrupt and screwing with somebody, and I had to save another peasant's life, which made it really interesting. Every time I went back, it wasn't this dead city on repeat. It felt alive because of that. The three witches, my God, dude, those were crazy, man. That's one of the best villains of the year, I think. Those three witches, oh my God, they were terrifying.
Yep. Have to agree. Oh,
it's such a great game. And the parts of the game where you play as Ciri, it's so similar, but it's so different at the same time. It's like, man, I kind of want a game just as Ciri now. Like, give me a Ciri game.
May see an expansion with Ciri, maybe.
Yeah. Speaking of, did you get the expansion or no? I didn't get it.
I didn't get it either.
Okay. I thought about it, but there's so much other stuff out that I've been playing.
Yeah, exactly. Do we need more stuff to play?
All right, so that's going to just about wrap it up then for VGCast Game of the Year. So just to recap, I had Tomb Raider, honorable mention Rocket League, Fallout 4, honorable mention Dying Light, and then The Witcher 3. Troy, you had?
Fallout 4 with honorable mention Tomb Raider, and then Tales of Borderlands number 2 with honorable mention, what was the honorable mention for the second one? Crap, I forgot. just that quickly. What was it? Assassin's Creed Syndicate. That's right. And then number one was The Witcher 3.
So I'm glad that though we did not agree on anything else on this list, we can agree that The Witcher 3 was probably the best title. So I guess that goes to show what we believe should win the Game Awards on December 3rd. It should be, in my opinion, and it sounds like yours as well, it should be The Witcher 3, and likely Developer of the Year should probably go to CD Projekt Red as well. All right, so before we wrap up our show, let's talk a little bit what we should look forward to. This is Just Cause 3. That's coming out just around the corner. Are you planning on getting Just Cause 3?
No.
No? Are you interested in it at all? Would you play it on sale or something? Or?
Yeah, if it was on sale, I'd get it.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's almost just too much stuff. It's too much stuff's coming out.
That's true.
Because next week is also, which is surprising considering that they barely was able to put out a working open beta, Rainbow Six Siege comes out also next week.
That's true.
So that's going to be interesting to see how well that works or doesn't work.
In addition to, you mentioned betas, the Uncharted 4 multiplayer beta comes out December 4th. And because I got a PlayStation 4 with Uncharted Collection, I'm going to call it Uncharted Collection from now on rather than the Nathan Drake Collection, because they're all Nathan Drake, so I don't see why anyone would call them the Nathan Drake Collection. But yeah, because I got Uncharted Collection now, the remaster, I get access to the beta for Uncharted 4, which again comes out December 4th. So that would be next Friday, so about a week from now. I think it's open, so I think I can talk about it. I'm not 100% sure, but I will be playing that with a couple of friends, so look for impressions on that. Troy, are you planning to get Rainbow Six or no?
Well, I do have it pre-ordered. So
okay, so there we go.
Maybe.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, maybe. Like I said, the beta's, when it wants to work, plays pretty well. You know, you still have to deal with jerks that want a team kill, but it's not bad whatsoever. So possibly hear about some Rainbow Six next week as well, or next time we record. Only other thing I could think of is, were there a lot of titles out there that disappointed to you this year?
That disappointed me?
Well, not just you, but just seemed like disappointments altogether. So I could think of one right now.
You can?
Yeah.
Which one?
Order 1886.
That disappointed you?
Dude, it disappointed everybody.
I heard a couple of people who, while not praising it as we would praise The Witcher, were accepting of its design choice.
Of being more of a movie than a game?
Yes. And you know how I stand with that, because I stand in the same spot on Order 1886 as I do on Rise, Son of Rome, Beyond Two Souls, on all of those games that are like that. But I did pick that up from the PlayStation Store last night because it's only $10. And I don't, the people that I heard positive praise towards that game, I personally don't agree with them now having played the game. They were defending it as saying, well, it's just like Uncharted. And to a certain extent, it's just like Uncharted. That would be like saying, well, the level in Batman Arkham Knight where you play as Joker first person mode is just like Halo. To a certain extent, it's just like Halo. There is, I think, the first 45 minutes of the Order 1886, there was almost no gameplay. It was press triangle to open this door. Press square to break this guy's neck. Tap X repeatedly to pull a lever. And then cutscene. So it is mostly a cinematic. And for $10, I can't really complain that much. It's only $10.
Yeah, for $10.
Yeah, it is designed to be a graphical showcase in the same way Rise Son of Rome was, which I did not want anything to do with that game when I got my Xbox. But if I were to see it for $10, I would certainly purchase it. So I would probably agree a little bit with what you said, although I do think it is kind of fun to watch this unfold because it's kind of interesting. It's like what Bloodborne should be, I guess, in my opinion, because Bloodborne is just really dull. I don't see how people like that game so much and that series. It is so dry to me, whereas at least the Order 1886 has something. So maybe to answer your question, maybe Bloodborne. I was expecting a lot more from Bloodborne. I paid $20 for that game recently. I have to admit, I'm not a long ways into it. It is my first Souls game because I'll lump it in with that category. But boy, I was on party chat with a friend of mine who was also trying out Bloodborne for the first time. And we were just like, we don't understand. What's the thing? What's the deal here? You know, like there was nothing. And I obviously you haven't played Bloodborne yet, but you have at least played the other Souls games, or at least most of them, right?
Yeah, I have. And
okay, but what's the story behind the Souls games? Is there a story?
There's a story. It's like Metal Gear. It's like a Metal Gear Solid type story to try and explain. So I'm not going to bother doing it. But yeah, I mean, it looks like a spiritual successor, and that's pretty much all it is. It just seems like a spiritual successor. It's not a actual successor to the Souls games. So, I mean...
And they're continuing the Souls games. Dark Souls 3 comes out next year. So,
yeah.
It's not like they're quitting. It looks like Sony just came to them and said, hey, we know these games are not that difficult to make. Can you make us one that is stylistically different, but mechanically the same game for just our PlayStation 4? And they did that. But, you know, I mean, they don't look that pretty. I mean, I can't say they because I haven't really played the other games. But Bloodborne, which was supposedly the one that looks the prettiest, doesn't look that pretty. The menus are like from 1998. I mean, I'm pretty sure Dreamcast games had better menus than this game. Jeez, I mean, it feels, this is going to be such an insult, but it feels very Namco. Do you get what I'm saying when I say that?
That's mean. That's just horrible.
It doesn't seem like something Naughty Dog would make, or 343, or Bungie, or Rockstar, or Konami, or I'm sorry, Kojima Productions, not Konami. It seems like something Namco would make. If I told you, yo, I just played this great game, it's from Namco, in your head, you would imagine this game with this style of menus. It's pretty arcadey and archaic, I'm not going to lie. I think it's an alright game. But, regardless, let's get off of Bloodborne.
All right. I can think of another one.
What's that?
Evolve.
Evolve, yeah, that's true. That's a big one.
What
a
letdown. Boy, Evolve, letdown.
Following the footsteps of Titanfall, in my opinion, but yeah.
Yeah. No, it did. Except Titanfall didn't. Did Titanfall have a beta?
Would you throw Battlefront into that category? Because now that I think about it, I was pretty let down with Battlefront. I don't know what I was expecting with that game, though.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, what were we really expecting from Battlefront?
Right?
You don't get single player.
That's right.
You don't. So, I mean, you shouldn't be expecting it, but you wanted it. So
it oozes Star Wars, you know, front and center. It oozes Star Wars. Yet, I don't know what it is.
You know what? I think it was because since we've only played the beta, we haven't played the full game. I think it's because they gave us one decent game type, but just lasts way too long. with Walker Assault. And the other game type was not all that great.
It sounds like Walker Assault is the whole game, though. Like, the other modes are essentially
mostly Team Deathmatch and Capture the Flag.
Well, I think they're mostly parts of Walker Assault that they just pulled out of Walker Assault. Like, oh, kill the Jedi or whatever, or the squadron up in the air. They just pulled out parts of Walker Assault and made them their own minigames. But the actual game itself is Walker Assault, which, by the way, happens on how many levels? One level. Because they wanted to keep it so... What? It doesn't? Oh, it's on Endor. That's right.
Yeah, it can happen on all the levels, actually.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Walker Assault can happen on all the levels?
Mm-hmm. I've seen people do the Walker Assault, and they've been on Tatooine before.
Oh, okay. I mean, it
can technically be on all the levels, but it doesn't really change too much.
Only four Walker Assault maps, supposedly.
Okay. So it's better than the one, but
certainly,
I mean,
absolutely, yes.
And I've heard they've actually tweaked it a little bit so that Empire is not completely unstoppable. So, you know, but like I said, the fact that it lasts like 30 minutes at almost the least amount of time, 30 minutes for the whole game type,
yeah,
is kind of ridiculous. And I do have one more.
What's that?
But it wasn't one that really was a disappointment. It was like, man, you should have seen that one coming. For all you Tony Hawk Pro Skater fans out there, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5.
What a disaster.
1999.
What a disaster.
Ooh, boy.
Disaster spelled A-S-S in the inside. Jesus.
You sure it's not like with a Z for extreme disaster? Because...
And they're still marketing that game on Black Friday for $30. That should be illegal.
Uh-huh. It had like a 4 or 5 gigabyte update.
It had an update that was larger than the game file size.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. I was like, man, this update's larger than the game. What's the update?
Unfortunately, I saw one of my friends buy that game.
Oh.
And I didn't have the heart to tell him,
you couldn't
slap what
that
are you
hand?
Thinking? I mean, at that point, no, I mean, I saw him on Xbox Live already playing it, and I mean, at that point, there's not really anything you can do because you can't return games. So, but man, when I saw that, I was like, no.
Oh boy.
Oh well.
Tony Hawk was dead when Tony Hawk, 4 came out, but it was just dead and buried when Tony Hawk Ride, the one where you had to buy the skateboard attachment, kind of, you know, killed it. So. But
yeah.
Bring it back with Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5. No, that's not. So, yeah, I mean, those are just some disappointing games. There are probably others, but I can't think of any other ones.
Let's round off this episode with the one last category from the Game Awards coming up, and that is the most anticipated game. Your nominees, if that's what we want to call them. I can't believe this actually is going to get an award. But most anticipated game. Horizon Zero Dawn by Guerrilla Games at Sony Computer Entertainment. No Man's Sky from Hello Games, which also come to PS4 and only PC. No Xbox One release date yet. Quantum Break, Microsoft exclusive by Remedy, the guys who made Alan Wake and I think Max Payne 1 and 2. The Last Guardian by Gen Design and Sony PlayStation 4 exclusive. And then Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. So three PlayStation 4 exclusives up for that award / honorable mention, and then No Man's Sky and Quantum Break. So what do you think there? What's of those five, what do you think would be your most anticipated?
Ain't gonna be Last Guardian.
Uncharted 4, maybe?
It's
No Man's Sky?
It's between Uncharted 4 and No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
Quantum Break does look pretty good. Not gonna lie. Looks really good, but even though I've read an article in Game Informer, it just doesn't seem like I'm getting enough of a picture from it.
Right.
I'm still kind of lost in what it's supposed to be. Horizon Zero Dawn looks amazing, but I need to know a story behind that one as well. No Man's Sky, don't really need a story. I mean, they already told you the story. You're flying a spaceship, discovering planets, and all kinds of other stuff. So, I mean, you know, it's what Star Citizen should be whenever that actually comes out. So, yeah, No Man's Sky. Uncharted 4 is a no-brainer. It's a sequel to Uncharted 3 and 2 and 1. and possibly the ending of the Uncharted series. If, you know, if it's a Thief's End, maybe it's the ending of it. And it looks amazing as well. So hopefully we'll hear some good things come from the multiplayer beta from you. I can't give it to The Last Guardian because they don't have a set date yet.
Yeah, I agree there. I think just looking down this list, the one that I would be most anticipated with, and I mean, it has to be Uncharted because that's the one I know when it's coming out. And we've seen the most on it, most reliable information on it. We know what that game is going to be. Like I said, we know the date. So yeah, I think most anticipated game should be Uncharted 4. But I can see it going to Last Guardian or No Man's Sky, though. But I feel like the one it should be is probably Uncharted 4.
Well, I mean, considering that both Horizon Zero Dawn and The Last Guardian don't actually have set release dates. They're both 2016. Yeah. No Man's Sky is at least June 2016. Uncharted 4, I believe, is March or April. I think it is March 18th, 2016. So that at least has one. And I think Quantum Break is actually in April.
April 5th.
Yeah, that's right, because it's the day before my birthday. So, yeah, at least those games actually have solid, as solid as you can get, release dates.
Right.
So I can't give it to a game that's, for one, Last Guardian's been most anticipated game for almost half a decade. So, yeah, and Horizon Zero Dawn, they just showed that at E3. So I don't know if it's getting that much buzz or not. Maybe it is, you know, but I don't know if it deserves a most anticipated game award just yet. You know, I can't think of any other games that would be on the list really for a most anticipated game for next year. But, you know, there's got to be some other games out there that would probably be better served to be on that list. I guess Final Fantasy 15. There you go. Final Fantasy 15. That could go up there, actually. XCOM 2. That could go up there. I'm not going to throw in Star Citizen because, no. Not going to throw in Hitman either. I mean, technically, you could do Hitman. You could do Street Fighter 5. There are tons of other games that can be up there. And that have actually gotten more buzz than Horizon Zero Dawn. But if I'm going to choose any of them, it's got to be Uncharted 4 because I've played all the other ones. I know what this is going to be about. Naughty Dog hasn't let me down yet. 3 wasn't all that great, but still, Naughty Dog hadn't let me down yet completely, so I'm going to go with the game company that has it, that's, you know, known for good quality.
Yeah, I have to agree there. I think as weird as that category is, I think the easy answer there is Uncharted 4. So, all right, well, that should just about wrap us up here on another episode of VGCast. As always, if you guys like what you see, like what you hear, please give us a thumbs up, a like, and a review. You can do that on iTunes if you like, because you can find us right there on iTunes. You can subscribe via the Podcast Addict app. Or, I'm sorry, that's a Podcast Addict on Android, or the podcast app on iTunes or iOS, or simply visit podomatic.com. Troy, you can tell them where you find you at on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me at PastorAlpha05 on Twitter.
There it is. You can find me at Brad Johansson, all one word. And like I said, that'll wrap us up, and I hope you guys enjoyed this Game of the Year episode, and we will catch you guys in the next one.
All right, later, guys.